Welcome to the Collector's Show, where you'll learn insider secrets about collecting everything. Best places to buy, how to judge authenticity, and what are the collectibles of the next generation. Here's your host, Harold Nickel.
It's the interview segment of the Collector's Show. Now, if you were with us last week, you'll remember that we had the opportunity to meet and talk with Robert Murch. And Murch is the world's leading authority, historian, and collector of the Ouija board. You might think that this week's show is part two of that, because we're going to meet another collector who has a similar interest and collection. His name is Brandon Hodge, and he collects planchettes. And at some point today, he'll explain to us what that means. But they're an important part of the Ouija board. Brandon, welcome to the Collector Show. And first of all, what does planchette mean?
Hey there, Harold. Thanks for having me. Planchettes, most listeners may be familiar with as the top device, the indicator, the pointer on a Ouija board. Mm-hmm. And that is certainly an apt term, but they actually have about a four-decade history that stretches back previous to the Ouija board, where planchettes were known as, they're called planchettes, but known as automatic writers. They served a little bit different purpose. Rather than pointing out letters on the board, they served as a means of communication through spirits by writing out messages on spread out paper on tabletops. And they were invented in the earliest years, just 4 or 5 years after the advent of modern American spiritualism. And they had a long lifetime and suffered some of the same peaks and valleys as a fad that the Ouija board would itself go through over the years.
And I want to get into the spiritualism and wrapping and table lifting and those kinds of things if time allows. But the planchette, just for folks listening who might not know, it's the device that it sits on four small legs, and you place your fingers on
it. Right. Typically, there's really two major forms of the planchette, and as a quick sort of spot of origin, UK planchettes tend to be kind of paddle-shaped. They've got a flat back and a round nose, and they're about 6 to 8 inches long, so they're larger than a Ouija board planchette. And typically two wheels, little caster wheels, like little mini furniture casters on the back.
Right.
And then the third wheel is actually a pencil. So there's a little pencil holder at the front. American boards are typically heart-shaped or shield-shaped, and they've got the same two wheels on the back lobes of the heart, if you will, and then the third wheel, again, being the pencil. And so, again, rather than having the alphabet board and you're pointing to the letters, mm-hmm. everyone has their hands on this device, and that third leg, the pencil, is scribbling out messages. And in the same sort of autonomous fashion that the Ouija board mysteriously points from letter to letter.
So if I'm in my parlor and I've got my friends over and we have our planchette and our big piece of paper out, we're going to receive some sort of a written communication.
That's right.
And that sounds, apologies to the Ouija board enthusiasts, but that sounds like a lot more fun than the board.
Well, it's a funny thing, and it really traces what I call the curious leapfrog, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
We get really close to a Ouija sort of experience in the very early days of spiritualism, even before the planchette's invented in 1853. Keep in mind that, the Fox sisters kind of get this whole thing started with the spirit wrappings and stuff. We could talk about that more later in 1848. And so by 1853, people are getting a little weary of waiting for the wraps. What they're having to do is something called alphabet calling. Mm. That is, you call out the alphabet in sequence until you receive a wrap. So it's, you go through A, B, C, D, E, F, G, M. There's a rap on the table, a rap on the floor, the wall, the ceiling. And once you hear the rap, somebody write down B. And you hope they don't have a particularly long name or a long sentence they're trying to communicate. But I believe I did the calculations once based on some Old Testaments that basically you could get 2 tweets an hour.
Good
so
guy.
About 240 characters an hour. Characters, not words, but characters an hour from alphabet calling. So after a few years of this, they're looking to expedite it. And alphabet cards come into the mix where they would lay out the alphabet. They would point to the different letters of the alphabet instead of calling them out, waiting for a rap. So you've got an indicator in your hand, a pencil maybe,
mm-hmm.
and you're hovering it over the board of these letters, you know, an alphabet card waiting for a response. And so they're doing that very early on. And then, poof, the planchette comes along in France.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk a little bit about its origins, but instead of we get so close to what's going to become the talking board or the Ouija board there in the early, you know, in late 1840s, early 1850s. But the planchette comes along and becomes this incredible fad over a few different phases, and they kind of forget about this, how close they got to a talking board sort of thing until the 1880s.
And you're supposed to, okay, so you have your pencil stuck in there and you've got your fingers on it, and the writing is going to come from somewhere. Now, some folks think it's like what folks back then thought it was, something from the spiritual world, and some people
right.
think it's just your subconscious at work.
Right.
What do you think?
You know, I usually leave those questions of belief to the to higher moral authorities than
okay,
myself.
Fair enough.
I tend to be a skeptic at heart, but I also don't, you know, I don't spend a lot of time contemplating that. And it's because having had experiences myself, it really is amazing. You
mm-hmm.
know, I encourage listeners, and I know there's a lot of superstition out there, but, you know, have fun with it and sit down with a Ouija board with your partner one night, because it's actually pretty cool. You know, Merch and I had an experience in Gettysburg last year, and we spent about 4 hours with a few other people in a room full of people trading off. And the communications we received were coherent. I'm not saying they were historically accurate. We were, if I recall, we were speaking to a nurse who had supposedly lived in this house during the Civil War, attended to patients and everything, and, you know, gave names of the other spirits that were in the house and all this. And even if you're a skeptic, it's pretty darn amazing
mm-hmm.
that four people, and we're not talking about one person pushing the planchette around the board, that four people were able to subconsciously create a coherent story. And that in itself is a pretty remarkable feat of the human mind, and some sort of weird unconscious collaboration that in itself is pretty amazing, regardless of your belief of the afterlife.
And having been to Gettysburg myself, thought to be a very haunted place.
Right.
The people you were with, did you know them, or were they?
Yes, everyone that we were there with, other collectors predominantly are the ones that took part in that session, and we all trusted one another emphatically. And
mm-hmm.
again, it's pretty amazing. You know, everybody's looking like, oh my God, we're barely touching the planchette; it's moving around. And it was right. It's not like one person had like four fingers on it and was pushing this thing around. And then we all switched out, and the story continued. At one point, you know, there's three people there that weren't there for the first hour, for example, and yet the story continued and grew, and more names and dates and things came into play. And, you know, you'll note I'm not calling them facts. We didn't
mm-hmm.
go fact check and see if a woman by that name had ever lived there. You get stories of that, both with the planchette and Ouija boards throughout history, that these amazing, how in the world could this have been known, communications took place. And we didn't quite get that, but we did tell a really oddly coherent story collaboratively.
That's so cool, because when we were there several years ago, and I promise we'll talk about collecting here, but my We were at a building, and my wife Marla opened a door to a room and heard a voice, and there was no one there.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And it was an empty house. I guess it could have been anything, but still, it's pretty spooky. So
yeah, we hear lots of those stories. You know, not only with the board, but just, you know, paranormal experiences in general.
Yeah, it's
we deal a lot with that community. And there's some strange stuff out there. And again, I tend to just keep you know, I see myself as sort of a pragmatic researcher first, so I tend to try to keep an arm's length at a lot of that stuff and not talk too much about belief. But it's amazing either way, whether someone believes or not. It's still, you know, the planchette, spirit communication devices, seances, table tipping in general, you know, just a good old-fashioned table tipping session.
Can
have the same sorts of results. You're speaking in kind of a binary code. You're calling out the alphabet. You're getting yes and no rap responses. You're getting numbers and dates, you know, again, sort of on that basic alphabet calling. And I know a lot of people are kind of freaked out by the Ouija a little bit. It gives them the heebie-jeebies, but that doesn't mean they can't pull out their kitchen table and have a fun little night of entertainment.
Yeah, I'm not ready to say that it makes me uncomfortable, but I'm like you. I'm really, regardless of where any of the messages come from, it's still pretty darn interesting.
It is, absolutely.
Now,
I think that's what makes these items so interesting. You know, you acquire these things, and I think that's what drives my interest. Someone along the line bought these items because they wanted to have that experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can really feel the weight of that. I'm not claiming any psychic ability or psychometry or anything like that, but you can feel the weight of that. And whether it's our, again, to go back to the subconscious mind, whether that's our unconscious picking up on verbal clues like, wow, those wheels are really worn down, or the wood on top is, you know, the varnish is really worn out from people using it. Maybe that's just our brains picking it up. But sometimes you get one and you go, you know what, this thing sat on a toy store shelf and ended up in an antique shop one year. Or you grab one and you go, wow, this was significant. Like, someone put this thing to the test. It probably got a lot of messages and maybe some really life-affirming messages. Maybe that device was very, very important to those people, and that's okay, whether you're a believer or not. Even if you think it's all bunk, you know, it might have brought some comfort to people. I own a planchette from the 1940s that was used in the UK to receive communications by a seance circle who were comforting widows of the war. They were reporting on the state of the afterlife of slain soldiers to their widows. And it's fully documented, you know, planchette that I've acquired from the family. And they made it. Someone in the family actually made this planchette at home.
So
that's a really amazing phenomenon, to know that this device actually comforted people during the Second World War.
And your interest, was it first in planchettes, or was it first in kind of this otherworldly communications? Tell me how you came on to collecting planchettes.
I moved to Austin in the mid-90s to go to school and play music and do all those things that we did in the mid-90s at my age. And I started working a magic counter at a gift shop, which is funny because I now own a gift shop that's sort of cast in the same vein.
Oh, cool.
But I started performing magic there. And I quickly discovered sort of what I've always called the redheaded stepchild of the magic world, which is the bizarre magicians.
Mm-hmm.
Folks like Doc Shields and Eugene Berger, and particularly Christian Chelman. And they were more interested less in flashy effects and, hey, I'm going to find your card, and more in telling an evocative story that was backed up by usually a subtle magical effect that usually had dark undertones or some sort of occult feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got very interested in that, and I actually created sort of a haunted antique seance flavored show that I performed. And this was in the mid and late 90s. And in the process of that, I acquired a very old, worn Ouija board, and I acquired my first planchette, an 1880 Selkow and Ryder mm-hmm. planchette, which some collectors may recognize that name as a popular toy company.
Mm-hmm.
And the planchette did it for me. The Ouija did it for me, too. I've got some very rare and unique talking boards, but really the planchette spoke to me. And as I met more collectors, I met a lot of Ouija collectors and talking board collectors, but the more I met and the more public I went with not only the research I was doing on planchettes, but also what I had acquired, I realized that I was kind of alone out there, that there were lots of talking board collectors, but no one was really giving the planchette its proper due.
Right.
And that's where my site, Mysterious Planchette, came up, was to sort of share all those years of research and collecting and put it out to the public. So that doesn't get lost. If something happens to me, somebody could always take up that torch.
So you're a magician, And you know
how... Well, I was a magician, long since retired.
Okay, but
young
you can,
age of, you know, 30.
Yeah, but you could... If somebody was trying to trick you with a planchette, you'd be able to... you would know. You know how tricks are done, right?
I do. I spend a lot of time... You know, I was always very drawn to not only the bizarre, but the seance expose magicians, such as, Houdini, Joseph Dunninger, William Marriott, those guys that felt they were doing a public service by exposing fraudulent mediums.
Right.
And I was always drawn to that. And there was a huge subculture of magic tricks and items that were supposedly these, this is what the mediums use, wrapping hands and talking skulls and wrapping belts that are rigged so you could produce false raps and stuff like that. And oftentimes I think they gave too much credit to those devices. A medium, if they were fraudulent, didn't need trick devices. They just needed a dark room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But those devices are also wonderful collectibles, and I have quite a few, examples of those sort of spook show devices, as you will.
And so I guess maybe from a cultural or a historical point of view or both, it sounds like the spiritual movement back in the mid-19th century is really the first dot in the string of dots that led up to planchettes and Ouija boards and those collectibles. Is that a fair conclusion?
Well, no, that's actually a little bit late.
That's
very late in the game. That's really the downfall. But, I've got very few specimens of planchettes made after the turn of the century. Planchettes, after the Ouija comes along, I'll go a little further back.
Sure.
So planchettes are created by the French spiritists that are experiencing seances, the table tipping phenomenon. And for listeners, that's when everyone puts their hands on the table and it begins to rock and sway, and you can ask it questions. It'll rap out. Really, the besides having a rapping medium, it's really your first do-it-yourself style of spirit communication, is to pull out the kitchen table and see if it'll move autonomously the same way a planchette or a Ouija planchette moves.
Right.
And so the French spiritists really latch on to this. And in the summer of 1853, it's one of those everybody is doing it kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a funny quote that was quoted by Alan Kardec, about how tedious those communications were. Like I said, two tweets an hour. That's not, that might not be enough. So there were these expedited means. That's when we have our first talking device patents. The Wagner psychograph comes out. Hornung's Emanuelector comes out in Germany. And the planchette in 1853. Somebody flipped a basket over at a planchette at a seance, stuck a pencil through it, and everybody put their hands on it, and it started scribbling out messages. So really a basket was the first planchette. And then that got refined to this flat, heart-shaped wooden board with the wheels on it. And it sort of sticks around just with spiritualists. So the spiritualists are using these devices, and it's not really gaining traction. But a very sensational article comes out in 1867 in a British publication called Once a Week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a three-page article that details these amazing communications that this normal non-spiritualist guy is sharing, and he basically brings a planchette to this sort of high society gathering over a weekend, and all these people do it. Now, we're not talking about, at this point, what might be considered kooky spiritualists. We're talking about some normal folks having fun with this great little game toy thing.
Right.
And while they were already being manufactured on a small craftsman scale, sort of a cottage industry scale, the Americans latch on to that article and it's reprinted. And it's funny, it was even being made on a cottage scale. There was a Boston bookseller, J.W. Cottrell, who had made 50 of these things. He had basically copied a French device, and they just didn't sell.
Mm-hmm.
And he was still sitting on some of them in 1868. We have reports of people going, yeah, I went to his bookshop and I saw one of the originals. But when that article hits, it gets reprinted. The Associated Press has good footage now. footing now. And this article spreads, and it becomes a massive fad. We're talking the yo-yo. We're talking the hula hoop. We're talking, you know, and it's sort of a forgotten fad.
Right.
Because we all know that the Ouija board blew up in the 1890s, and really the planchette was the first big spirit communication fad. It wasn't necessarily that everyone started talking to spirits, although that might be the case, but usually it was just, planchette is this phenomenon. They would call it, they would ask it, planchette, can you respond to our questions? They weren't necessarily asking the spirit world. So it became this incredible fad. And, of course, with a popular fad comes a flood of manufacturers. And that's really where my collection gets its start, is in that flood of manufacturing from the 1860s. And it will ebb and flow over the years, particularly post-wars.
Mm-hmm.
The planchette will become very popular again as people suffer deaths in their family and want to communicate with the other side.
Right.
And then it piggybacks on the Ouija board. The Ouija board really takes it over in the 1890s, and the planchette fades, and it just kind of rides its coattails as the Ouija ebbs and flows. But really by the 1920s and early 1930s, the planchette is largely dead, and there are very few manufactured specimens after that time.
And I don't mind saying that I was pretty surprised at all of the culture and interest that there are in planchettes and these types of collectibles. What do you think draws people to this? Is it to socialize, or is it something else?
I don't know if it's to socialize. It's been we've had some growing pains in sort of our private collecting community on that level. Because,
tell
you know,
me more.
Anytime you get a bunch of collectors together, it can be heated. Everyone's after the same thing.
Oh,
when
yeah.
you know, I've got some specimens in my collection that are the singular surviving example, as far as we know, of some items.
Wow.
And so when you're talking about that kind of rarity, as in any collecting field, things can get a little bit heated.
Yeah.
But also a lot of love there. You know, we're competitive, but at the same time, we travel and see one another. I've documented many collections. Merch and I both traveled together to document many collections over the years. And so it's also a fantastic camaraderie. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of a love-hate relationship. You love these people, but, man, you hate when you get beat. So,
yeah.
You know, that's been one thing. But I think there's a certain appeal. The board themselves are really little works of art. You know, particularly when you get up to the 40s, they are works of art. There is, you know, a high degree of artistry to them.
Right.
But there's something about that curved backdrop of letters. The flat numbers underneath, the form of the planchette is very appealing. And then, of course, there's the draw of the communication themselves. It's a little creepy, it's a little spooky. And it plays into that sort of mystery that I think things like bottle collectors or stamp mm-hmm. collectors or coin collectors, you know, there's not an inherent disarm, if you will. You know, it's not particularly disarming when you tell somebody I'm a stamp collector. You know, they don't arc their eyebrows and go, ooh.
Yeah. They don't ask follow-ups.
You know, and we get that a lot when we talk about spirit communication devices and historical seance devices. You know, you get this what is wrong with you kind of vibe. And so I think it takes a special sort of collector, the right amount of obsessiveness and interest.
Well, I think so, because you know, you mentioned art, and that's one of the things that a lot of these things, particularly advertising, which we've talked about on the program,
Absolutely.
That, you know, people aren't particularly crazy about laundry powder, but the art on the box or the creativity needed for signs, which in the old days had to be painted by hand,
right.
those are the kinds of things that attract people. As much as, I was always a fan of, I don't know, SOS pads or something.
Right, exactly.
So in the world of planchette collecting, and what we've just learned, the competitive world of planchette collecting, is there one in particular that you are looking for, or a certain type that you don't have that you'd really, really like to get?
You know, I have a lot of fantastic specimens that I've acquired over the years. I have a boxed Kirby and Company planchette from 1868, which is actually made of an early, they called it the India rubber, but it's actually made of an early plastic, ebonite, mm-hmm. which is one of the second, I believe, second form of plastic that was manufactured in the States. Mm-hmm. I have a glass Kirby and Company planchette, probably the pinnacle of planchette development. It was made of plate glass. You can see right through it and see what you were writing. Mm-hmm. So I've really... And, you know, some other singular items. I've got the only known surviving Wanda tipping table, which is a neat little Ouija-like device. So I've acquired a lot of the big ones over the years. I own one of Dr. Robert Hare's spiritoscopes, which is really a historical piece because he set out to debunk spiritualism with this device, but it got turned on its head. He became a believer.
Wow.
And this would be the equivalent of Neil deGrasse Tyson coming out and saying, yeah, spirits are real. I can talk to them with this device. And you know, heaven exists. Hallelujah.
Yeah, that would be.
It really was
cool.
That big. And I have the early 1850s device that Robert Hare used to test mediums. So I don't know that I'll ever be able to top that particular one, but there are some on the list that, if they even survive, I mean, there's just no hint of survival of these. Wagner's 1853 psychograph was a German-made instrument that was sort of like, if listeners are familiar with pantographs, which are these drawing replicator.
Oh, yeah.
They're these little crisscrossed arms that help you replicate drawings.
Mm-hmm.
It was based on that, but it was the spirit communication device.
The composer, Wagner.
Right. He was a music director and teacher,
okay.
And he moved to London to try to sell these devices, and they were expensive and elaborate, and they didn't catch on. But we have finally, in my research, after years of searching, uncovered two illustrations of that device. That's a huge coup, that we can even see it in the flesh. Robert Hare's own devices were based on the Isaac Pease spiritual telegraph dial, which was a tabletop device. It was a little dial, a counterweighted dial. You would throw a weight off the side of the table, and as you tipped the table back and forth, the dial would turn and point to letters and numbers and even music notes. And we've got one tiny little surviving illustration of that, and either of those would just be a major, major discovery for myself and my research and some of my collaborators and companions, and that just those devices, they really just are the earliest forms, and beyond a few illustrations, there's just no trace of them.
Well,
those discoveries would be a major coup.
Yeah, I'll invite everybody to keep an eye peeled, but it doesn't sound like we should be very optimistic. Now,
no one would know what they were looking at. Even if there's one sitting in an antique shop right up the street, they would never know that the crisscrossed wooden arms with weird circles on them was a spirit communication device.
Well, that's a good point. Unless they're listening.
Yeah. If you've got a weird pantograph-like device with a needle on the end of it that attaches to a tabletop, please
call Brandon
immediately.
And, we only have a couple of minutes left. You own a couple of businesses in the Austin area. Are they related to your collecting hobby?
No, but they keep me young. I have a toy store.
Oh, cool.
Called Monkey See, Monkey Do that has been my business since 2005. And I've got a long background in sort of the toy and gift shop industry. It was my college job.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 07, I opened Big Top Candy Shop just a few doors down. So I spend my days, you know, pretty much buying toys and candy. And those, I'm able to employ a fantastic group of about 15 or 20 folks here, and they keep it fun and light. And so it's not a bad way to make a living.
All day long with toys and candy, I'm going to grow up to be like you. And it's and for your planchette hobby, you have a website. Tell us about that.
I do. I've got a few avenues. Mysteriousplanchette.com is, and just no weird punctuation, just all one word, mysteriousplanchette.com is sort of the hub of everything. It has my galleries on it. It's the galleries split up between American and British planchettes, what we call other talking tables, which are some of those other seance devices I spoke to, as well as some talking board planchettes, as well as there's well over about 60 pages of information that's all my primary research to the different companies that produce these things, the different personalities behind them, timelines, 4 pages of history of the devices. It's a pretty comprehensive website, and it kind of gets updated through my blog, which is mysteriousplanchette.blogspot.com, and there's a portal to that on my homepage. And that kind of details my ongoing adventures and research, some of my world travels as I go around lecturing about these devices. I just returned from a lecture in Utrecht, Netherlands, for preserving occult artifacts and devices, and went and spoke to that. And so new discoveries and such tend to make it to my blog. And then, of course, I've got a pretty vibrant Facebook page where all that sort of coalesces. And, again, that's under Brandon Hodge, mysteriousplanchette.com. It's pretty easy to find. And, again, there's a portal to that on my homepage and my website as well.
Well, you've done such a great job of telling a story to us about these collectible items and planchettes, and really illustrated just a whole nother universe of collecting collectibles and interests for me, and I could talk to you for a long time. Unfortunately, the clock's got us. But I just
the nature of the beast.
Yeah, I just want to thank you, Brandon Hodge, planchette collector extraordinary, this week on the Collector Show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Harold.
One more quick word right after this. I'm Harold Nickel. It's the Collector Show.